I am Stephen L. Gibson, and this is part of the ongoing Oral History Collection Project for 2009. And with me today is Joe Chatterton. And why don't we start at the beginning, Joe? Can you tell us when and where you were born?
I was born in a little town of Richland Junction. It was a little town that was on CKNS Railroad. And it had spurs that went off to Richland and another one that went down to the valley down there where they grew onions and stuff. And my dad was a station agent at the place there, okay, at Richland Junction.
So you're really from the area, or yeah, pretty close to the area.
Yeah. Here. I was born there, and then my dad moved to Parchment in 1926, and I started kindergarten in 1926 and went on to graduate from the school there.
Excellent. And tell me, so in 26, and do you happen to remember where your dad moved, what his address was, or where did you live then when you moved to Parchment?
We were just outside of Parchment, Cooper Township, one block. There's a street, Rosedale there, and he built a house on the corner there. Actually had lots on both sides of what's Rosedale now.
Okay. And for the record, too, I should ask you where you live.
I live on Parchmount now, 1029 Parchmount. My house backs up onto the schoolyard, and tennis courts are about 100 yards from my back door, and I always like to play tennis.
Excellent. So in 26, you moved to Rosedale with your dad, and your dad worked for the railroad. Was he still working for the railroad?
No, he went to work for KVP then. He went to work on the Blight paper machine when they started it up.
Wow. And what, I'm sorry, tell me the name of that paper machine again?
Blight, like a city in Wisconsin. And he worked there until he retired in 1960.
Wow. And how big was KVP at the time in 1926? Do you have any idea how many people might have been working there at the time?
Probably at least 600 or 700, but everything was done by hand. Then you had to bring the pulp you got. You had to unload that by hand and bring it in with a hand truck. You didn't have any of the forklift trucks we got now, and so they had an awful lot of people you had to have to do that. And we did. They made paper, and they converted it and printed it, and so they had a lot of people.
Wow. And I'm sorry, tell me again what your dad's role was when he started with the mill.
He went to work on the paper machine as a general helper, and he eventually he ended up retiring when he was running Yankee 2 paper machine.
Interesting. Now, in those early days, I've seen pictures of barefoot press operators. Is that right?
Yeah. My dad went barefoot quite a bit.
Did he really?
Yeah. That's what he did then. They didn't wear any hearing aids. No problems with wearing a hard hat or anything.
So it was probably a lot of those guys couldn't hear very well after.
Yeah, I don't particularly remember that, but he didn't. I have a hearing problem, but I hear well enough that I don't wear hearing aids.
And your dad didn't have hearing problems later in life?
Not that I remember.
Yeah. Well, tell me your earliest recollections then. When you moved here as a, how old would you have been then, in 26?
6 years old.
6 year old young man. What were your first experiences with parchment?
I think walking to school. I had about 3/4 of a mile to walk, and we always walked, and my parents said that you had to do the best you could and go to school and be there every day and on time. And I remember we used to get a lot more snow than we do now, and you used to walk in snow up to your knees. Or we got there every day and got there on time, whatever.
And where was your school located?
It was where the middle school is now. That was the only school at the time. It was two stories, and Mr. Kindleberger founded the community here, and he thought that education was really important, and he made sure that we had a good school and that we had the best teachers, and that we had a curriculum that really was important. And he used to come and talk to us sometimes, and at the school, and, he realized that the thing that you can do most to impress people is give them some of your time. If you give them some of your time and tell them what you think is important, why, that's what they do too. And I remember him coming and talking to us, and we had a really good teachers.
So you remember Jake Kindleberger visiting your classroom and talking to all the kids?
Yeah.
What was he like?
Well, he was a real impressive speaker. He was a tremendous salesman. He started the company, and for a number of years, he was the only salesman they had. They'd make the paper, and he'd go out and sell it. And the only competitor they had out here was West Carlton Parchment down in Ohio. And he had worked there, and that's where he learned the trade. And when he got up here and started to make paper, he found out that those people down in West Carlton didn't like him anymore. And he had to develop special grades and to sell a paper. And he did, and he was a wonderful salesman and an impressive person to meet.
Yeah, strong personality.
Mm-hmm. He didn't come up here until he was, I think, in his 30s.
Interesting. Tell me then, so you went to school there in, and that was grades K through 8 at that point?
10.
Through 10 at mm-hmm. that point even, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then later it went down to K through 8.
Yeah, and then it went back, I think it went to K through 9 for a while, and then it went to down to 8.
Okay. And that was all in what was the old two-story part of, as you say, the middle school, but that was all the two-story part that's been demolished now here.
Yeah, it's all gone now.
And, yeah.
But part of it was there for a number of years, up probably up till 20 years ago.
Yeah, maybe the late 70s, 1980. Tell me what else was different or what you remember about the city as a child. For instance, landmarks or businesses. What was the city like?
The city was actually run by KVP. It was a company town. There's no doubt about that. And school only had classrooms. It didn't have any gym or anything like that. And I think in 1928, Kindleberger built what they call a community house. And that's gone now. But the community house had a big auditorium. And when I was going to school here, we had a graduation from eighth grade, like you have from high school now. And I was chosen to give the class well because I was one of the better students, I guess. And it was a very much a community town.
And did you give that presentation and have the graduation at the community house?
Yes. And I was in a class play there, too.
Oh, wow.
So the original community house just had the auditorium and a big dining room and area in the basement. And they used to put on suppers there. And it could probably seat about 300 to eat. And the auditorium that Kindleberger used as a church, he was actually almost like a pastor. He was very serious about his religion. And everybody was expected to go to church on Sunday. And he would go around and let people know, you know, they didn't go.
Yeah.
That they shouldn't be working on Sunday. And a friend of mine said he came around and found him mowing his lawn on Sunday, and he tried to tell him he shouldn't do that. And he says, I just told him, I do what he wants on weekdays. On Sunday, I do what I want.
That's funny. So he would let the employees know.
Yeah.
If they weren't showing up in church, he might remind them to show up.
Yeah.
Or encourage them to.
Encourage them. And he would go around the community, and if you didn't mow your lawn or take care of stuff, he'd let you know. And he wanted his community to look sharp.
Interesting. So as you grew up and went through school, your dad obviously stayed with the mill for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about where your career went.
I ended up, after 10 grades, I went down to St. Augustine's and graduated from there. And then I went to Western Michigan University, which was then... I think at first when we first lived there, it was a normal school. And I think when I was started, it was called Western Michigan College of Education. And then it eventually came to Western Michigan University. And I entered the college with the idea of going 2 years to Western. And then I wanted to go down and get an engineering degree from University of Michigan. That was my goal. But in 1941, why, something happened, you know.
Yes.
And after the war started, I knew I was going to be eligible to go. So they didn't have the draft when they started, and they drew that up later. I never got a draft card. I went down and volunteered for the Navy because I had heard about a program that they called V7. V7 was a program that would allow you to continue and graduate from college, and then you'd go to midshipman school. And so I changed then and got a degree with a major in chemistry and a minor in physics, and I graduated from Western at 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and at 3 o'clock in the afternoon I was on a train to New York City. I got to New York City, it was Sunday morning, and I went down to Columbia University and enrolled in their midshipman school, and 4 months later I was what they called a 90 degree wonder. I was an officer, and of course your assignments and everything were considered confidential, but when I graduated, I had to report to Norfolk, Virginia, after I got about a month's leave, and came home and had a good time and got engaged to my gal that's my wife. And
tell us your wife's name.
It was Betty. Elizabeth, but everybody called her Betty. And she's a wonderful lady. She, about her connection with this library. She was on the library board when they started to work on developing this, and she was on the library board for a number of years. And she's a really sharp lady.
And how did you meet her?
Well, first time I met her, I wasn't impressed particularly, and neither was she. We always went to 8 o'clock Mass at St. Augustine's. They didn't have a church out here. And Betty was a Catholic, and she wanted to go to Mass. She asked somebody, because there was hardly any Catholics in the community. All of them went to the Methodist church down there. So she asked the guy, and she said, well, the only Catholic I know around here is the Chatterton family. And so she was living up on top of the hill on Glendale Avenue, and we'd come to pick her up with a family car. And of course I'm from a family of 8 children, so she'd have to get in with all the family, and she was usually got in on the bottom layer in the back seat. She only went with us a couple of times, and then she found out that a man was about a half a block from where she was living was a Catholic, and he went to Mass later in the day, and she could ride with him, and so she didn't ride with us anymore.
But you finally reconnected when you came back to town?
I connected again when I went to Western. She was going to Western. She got a scholarship to come to Western. Her family was having hard times, and that was the time of the Depression. And her dad worked for Buick Motors, and they had a lot of layoffs and stuff, and they couldn't afford to help her much, but she got a scholarship to take care of all the stuff. And when she happened to be living in Parchment, because one of the ladies that was a secretary at Western lived out there, and she had a scholarship to cover tuition and books, but she had to work for her room and board. And so she was due to come out every day after class and cook supper for them. Both of them were that family. They didn't have any children. Actually, it was the family of the principal of the high school, and one of my favorite teachers. He was a really sharp man.
So she worked for them.
Mm-hmm. She worked for them for 1 year, okay. And then she got a job at working at the school, and then she lived in a home down in downtown Kalamazoo near the campus. But she worked all the way through.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure too, we could have, and I know because our time's limited, it'd be interesting to hear more about your war experience to me. Mm-hmm. But keeping kind of focused on Parchment a bit, when did your service end, and when did you come back to Parchment?
Well, while I was going to college, I worked part time at KVP, and that's how I was able to get my. And during the summer, I worked full time as a help or someplace, and then I got a chance to work part-time after school, and that's how I financed my college education.
Okay. And what year did you come back from the war then?
I came back in 1945.
Okay.
After D-Day and Normandy, we came back to the States, and our ship was outfitted for the invasion of Japan. And it also got married at that time. And we were going through the Panama Canal Zone when Truman dropped the first bomb, and partway to Hawaii when they dropped a second one, and then a couple weeks later they surrendered unconditionally. So I've always thanked Harry.
Yeah.
And because...
And your service was largely done at that point.
Well, no, I had to... Came back to the States, and we outfitted a ship for occupation of Japan, and we took a bunch of troops and stuff for the occupation, and then I went on back to Japan.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what year did you get back to Parchment?
In 45.
Okay. I'm sorry. I asked you that. In 45, and... Did the as long as we're
no, it was 46 when it was
okay,
46.
That makes sense. Okay, thank you. So 46, and what did the war do here at home to the mill? Do you have, was it business as usual at the mill?
KVP was became quite involved with the war efforts. They had been growing real fast. Kindleberger was always had the next development. You know, he started with one parchment machine, and eventually they got up to where they had six of them, and started with one paper machine, and now when it went dead with Crown Vantage, why, there were six of them, and he was always had a next project plan. But when I came back, a man by the name of Frank Libby, I think you probably know him, of him, anyway, he was like a plant manager. And when I got back from service, a returning veteran was big news, and he heard I was back. And so when he saw my dad, he said, have him come in and see me. And so I went over to see him, and he said, we'd like to have you come work for us in the lab. And I said, well, perhaps, but I think maybe I'd like to go get an engineering degree. And so he said, well, this is in February, and the next semester will be in the fall. He says, you're a married man, you want to work. And he says, I'll put you to work. So I once started working in the lab and as a technician, and eventually I ended up leaving James River as a technical director for the parchment division. So it was a great experience.
Yeah, so you were with them from that time of February 46 mm-hmm. onward.
On to 85,
yeah.
And I retired, and then I the company asked me, I was their parchmentizing expert. I worked in all the divisions, but I always was the parchmentizing expert, and so they asked me to stay on as a consultant and I did that for about 5 years. So I worked at KVP from 1939 through 50.
Boy, that's a yeah. Through. I'm sorry. What year did you retire?
85. Through 90.
Through 90.
I worked there, either as a full time or part time, and I worked in all the departments. I worked. After I started working there for a while, they decided that I was classified as a engineer, and that all their engineers should go to work in each of the departments. And so I worked in all of the departments. We had a filter plant then, and I filtered river water to use, and we had a powerhouse and all the paper making departments, and I had a chance to go to Espanola. KVP bought Espanola, and it was an old mill that made newsprint, and Kindleberger and Hayward saw that as an opportunity to go up there and they had a lot of woods land and rights, and to go up there and get to have a pulp mill up there. So,
I'm sorry, where is Espanola?
It's in Canada. It's about 150 miles straight east of the Sioux. And they had wood rights way up in above there, north of Espanola.
Very good.
I worked up there a number of times too.
Interesting. So, boy, over those years, you saw every aspect of the business, really.
Yeah.
Tell me, I guess, and you've done a lot of work, I should mention, in both video and in print about the history of the mill, so we can reference some of those other works that you've done. And obviously, limited time, we can't cover all that, but what do you think, you mentioned Libby, you mentioned Hayward.
Mm-hmm.
Culturally, who were some of the power players apart from Jake Kindleberger in making this community what it is today?
Well, Libby was one of them, and he was the first technical man that was hired. And then the parchment division was always run by the seat of your pants. You learned it from the guy that was there. And they hired a man by the name of Marshall Rutz, who was the first technical man to work in the parchment area. And he started to apply the technical principles and so forth. And when he was been there for a little over a year, and I had worked with him some before, I guess he'd been there 3 or 4 years then, but he asked me if I would come to him, work for him in the parchment area, and I said, sure, it's something sounds interesting. And so when the day I was supposed to come to work for him, I said, what do you want me to do down there? He says, I want you to go out, and I want you to see what all the men do on the machines and learn exactly what they do and why they do it. And you will, I'll expect you to know more about the parchment machines than any one of the men or supervisors. And so I went out and started working with the guys, and I found out if you talk to them in a language they could understand, that they would work with you. And they worked with me, and I learned to do that. I checked all the formulas for the treatments that they put on the parchment and revised all that. And then I eventually, they had me work in all the other departments. So that's sort of that in a nutshell. But you ask about videos. I got started on videos when I heard that Crown Vantage was going to close the parchment division. No, it was James Irver who was going to close the parchment division. I had bought a video camera, an analog video camera, that I bought a top-of-the-line model, fortunately. But I have a daughter who lives in France, and so my wife and I have been to France more than a dozen times and spent about a month there each time. So I had this video camera, and I asked permission. It was Crown Vantage that closed it, and asked permission of Crown Vantage to take the video. And they said, sure, go ahead, we'll do whatever you want to do. So I took video, actually, of the paper making for the parchment machines, and it came out to be a real good video, because one of the men that worked on the parchment machines worked at Community Access TV, and he was a video expert. And so I was started to do that and work on it. I thought I could just walk through the parchment machine with a video camera and do voiceover. And I found out that you can't do that. There's too much noise in the marine. The place is wet and there's acid, and it just doesn't work. And this guy said, just shoot a whole lot of video and we'll take it down to Community Access and edit it. And so he did, and it turned out to be a really nice video.
Yeah.
And then later on, I've taken video of the other operations. I have a video that I made of mill two paper machines when they were shut down. They were shut down, but I got a guy to come and turn on all the lights, so I got that. That has to be edited. That isn't edited. And I have other video that I took from when they were taking down the parchment machines, and that has to be edited too.
Those are great historical documents that the library here can maintain too. Let me, if you don't mind, we're probably within 5 minutes or so, and one of the things I wanted to ask you may sound strange, but let's say 50 years from now, when history starts to kind of take a look at the origins of parchment and the mill, what would you want people 50 years from now to know about parchment and the mill?
Of course, it'll all be gone. There won't be any buildings here of paper making. KVP was a victim of a change in the way pulp and paper were made. When KVP was started, they made the pulp where the trees were and shipped the pulp down to the paper mill. And they made paper, and back about 1990, why they changed this system, and now they have built new pulp and paper machines where the trees are. So they make the pulp and they make the paper there, and these mills like this became obsolete. And all over the country, there are dozens of mills like KVP have gone bankrupt. There's no paper made or like that around anymore. It's all changed. Times changed.
Yeah, but we have to thank still that that business for really, really shaping and creating this community here.
Yeah, and a number of years ago, I started writing the history of the KVP and the parchment company, and I fortunately got a computer, and right now I've on my third one, but it's a pretty good computer, and I've written about 60 pages of on the computer, which is quite a book. And you get it into a paperback, it'll probably be 100 pages. And I got a guy that's written now and out for editing, and then I've got a guy that's going to come and help me put pictures in. So we'll have pictures of Kindleberger and paper machines and the other people that were involved.
What a wonderful gift to the community that will be.
Yeah. And I've gotten arrangements now to, you know, I've taken some video of the parchment, when the parchment machines went down, the paper machines, and I want to take video of when they take down the buildings that are left.
Yeah.
And I've been a friend with a mayor of Parchment for a number of years, and so I figured when I wanted to get a good place to take the video of taking the machines down, and so I asked a mayor to be my assistant cameraman.
I love it. Wonderful. Wonderful.
So we've got a lot to work on if I can get it all done.
Boy, that's great. Well, we'll all look forward to that, and we sure appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. And
yeah.
And thank you for all that documentation that you've done. That's a great thing for the future of our community to be able to look back and see that.